QB4 is official, and then we have some football and basketball questions. It's time for another Barn Takeover.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the bug, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five, and we're ready to get after on this Thursday, get a little Barn Takeover action. We're going to dive into the questions in a minute, but before we start that, we're going to talk about the QB4 situation that's finally official. We've been kind of hinting at it for a while, and Tanner Bailey makes it official yesterday that he'll be joining the roster coming out of retirement. We'll dive into that as well. But before we do that, we got to give a shout out to mybookie.ag. Use coupon code NEXTROUND for a 50% deposit bonus. Give them $100. They're going to give you 50 back in free play to play with. Go have fun in the sports book, the casino, all the good stuff. Check them out. It's mybookie.ag. Before we jump into the questions, obviously some big breaking news. Auburn's finally made it official where they added Tanner Bailey. I guess technically he'd be considered the South Carolina transfer, even though he was already on campus. He will be part of the roster for spring. He will be your QB4, and I think it's a great addition. I think it's a great addition to get into the mix. Auburn was going to go into spring with only two quarterbacks otherwise, and you got a guy who was a pretty highly rated quarterback coming out of high school, never really got a chance to play that much at South Carolina, really at all. He was in the 2022 class, so that was the year that Hugh was hired, and he redshirted his first year, played his second year, never really got any snaps, and then he decided he was going to sort of step away from football for a multitude of reasons. Always had his heart at Auburn, transferred to Auburn, and just didn't play anything last year. He was just a student at Auburn, which I think is just shows how much he loves Auburn. You know, his dad played at Auburn. It's always been his dream to be an Auburn Tiger. And now he gets to live out that reality, which is exciting for him and obviously exciting for Auburn too, because you get another talented guy that you can add to the quarterback room for spring to just kind of up the competition. And, hey, Tanner's no slouch. I know there may be some rust that he's got to shake off, but a quarterback room of Jackson Arnold, Ashton Daniels, Deuce Knight, and Tanner Bailey is a pretty solid quarterback room. If you just go off of quarterback high school rankings, you're feeling pretty good. So a lot of talent in that quarterback room. Fired up about Tanner Bailey. I was on the South Carolina message boards yesterday, kind of just seeing what their thoughts were after the announcement. And one of their moderators said something to the tune of, "This kid's way too good to just not play football." I mean, that's coming from the school that he left. Like, in other words, I always had high hopes for that kid. It was a shame to see him step away from football, fired up, he's back in it, because he's just way too good of a player to just not play college football. So he's going to have multiple years left. I think they're trying to decide right now, is it going to be 2 years or 3 years? How does that year sitting out affect his eligibility? If they can obviously work the way around that, he redshirted his first year, played his second year, and then sat out, he should have 3 years. But how does that sit out year affect your eligibility? They'll see how they'll work through that. So 2 years minimum, maybe three. So we'll see what happens. But regardless, Tanner will be joining the squad. I guess yesterday was move-in day. So yesterday was move-in day for a lot of the freshmen, transfers, things like that. So I guess he's probably getting settled, getting back in the mix. And then I'm sure they'll start meetings very soon. And then obviously spring is just right around the corner. Workouts, all that stuff, that'll be going down. And then spring practice starts in just a couple months. So big news, the quarterback room is finished. And I think Auburn's very happy with this addition, being able to bring Tanner back into football. So good for him, good for Auburn. That position group is set. All right, so let's jump into the questions. I wanted to get that out of the way because that's obviously some very important news. Now we'll jump into the Barn Takeover, the most fun part of the week for me, where members of the Barn, Auburn.com, submit all their questions, and then I jump in, pick out some of the better ones, the more fun topics, and then we go through them, call them out by name, and have some fun. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in it. Grizzly Adams 16, one of my favorite posters, been around for a while on a lot of different platforms. Could you see Perry Thompson and Horatio sliding into the Rivaldo role? This is something that I've talked about multiple times, I think, over the past, since we've been talking about the portal, basically since the portal opened up. You lose a lot of production from Rivaldo out of that big slot position. I mean, he was really more so of a big slot receiver than he was an actual inline tight end. He was a really good receiver. He was a questionable blocker at times. So what do you really need in that position? Horatio actually played a ton of snaps in the slot at Wake Forest. Perry Thompson, I feel like, is big enough that if you need him to be that big body over the middle, you need him to be that big body in the slot, that big slot position. I mean, he's 6'3", 220-plus pounds. I think he could easily be that role. And honestly, that may be a better role for him. And I'm talking about Perry Thompson at this point in time. Look, Perry, when you're out on the outside, obviously there's got to be some quick twitch and there's got to be ability to get off a press. And sometimes that takes people longer to adjust to than others, even if they have all the physical gifts to be able to be an elite receiver at this level. Sometimes it just takes an adjustment to get to that when you're able to get those releases and then stay on track to run your route and have the timing down. Sometimes that takes a little bit of an adjustment. I think a little bit of that's why Perry didn't play quite as much last year, because I think he struggles a little bit sort of getting off. His get off is a little bit, you know, not quite there yet. Easy to kind of get him off rhythm when he's got a man in his face. Well, you can completely remedy that by sliding him inside, because typically you're going to have a little bit of a more free release at the slot, and he would be a matchup nightmare. So I'm curious to see in spring if this is something that they look at with both of these guys, because, again, Horatio has experience there. Perry, I think, is athletic enough you can move him anywhere on the field. You could have him at tailback if you wanted to. But yeah, you just get him to, you get him to slide inside, and then he's got a defender that's a little bit more off the ball, gives him a chance to sort of get up a head of steam, because I feel like he's more fast than he is quick. That may be a perfect spot for him. Use that big body on a safety, on a linebacker as a complete terror. It would be a complete terror. I think it would be a fantastic position. And you saw Hugh do stuff like that with Evan Ingram. They're very similar in size, Evan Ingram to Perry Thompson. You saw, and probably speed as well. You saw him do a lot of stuff like that with Evan Ingram at Ole Miss. Could you see Perry sort of maybe blossom into that role? I think that would be fantastic, because you got a lot of options on the outside. I mean, between obviously Cam's going to lock down one side, Malcolm can play outside. Eric Singleton Jr. can play outside. Horatio can play outside. Perry can too, but I think this could be an even better pathway to playing time. And then obviously, like I said, Horatio has the experience there too. Great question. And no intel to suggest it's going to happen, but I think it makes common sense to give it a shot. So I would be curious in spring to see if that materializes. Next one, Boogin B. Love the name. Boogin B. Always stay Boogin. You only get one in 2025. Which sport would you want a national championship in? Football, basketball, or baseball? This is not really a hard question for me. Look, I love basketball, okay? I love Bruce Pearl. I love everything he's done. I love baseball. I love Butch Thompson. I love going to Omaha. I love all that, okay? It's fun to me, but it's a for me now, and don't be offended, and nobody be offended by this. To me, they're fun off-season sports to get you to get you through the year and get you back to football season. I'm a football guy, okay? Football drives everything for Auburn. It always has. It always will be. And it's never going to change, okay? So a football national championship at Auburn helps out everybody, helps out every other sport, helps out everything about the university. Football drives everything. If I had to pick one between the three, it wouldn't even be a question. I'd pick football. And I think it'd be even more fun now with the playoff and like making a playoff run and things like that. Yeah, it's not even really that hard of a question for me. Football, hands down, if I had to pick one of the big three to win a national championship, I'd definitely pick football. Now, if I had to go after that, I'd put them in order of football, basketball, baseball. Baseball's great. Baseball's fun. Long season. And it's weird how a lot of times it ends after school's out and stuff like that. But I think that's the way I would go. I'd go football, baseball, basketball, baseball. I think that's probably the case for the vast majority of Auburn fans too. So I don't think that's that controversial. Great question, though. It's a good one because I've really started looking at the schedule lately. Bryce Tillman, another one, longtime member, and a lot of great content that he brings to the board. A lot of Mississippi connections, so I enjoy the information that he brings. Out of the 2025 schedule, what is your favorite and least favorite three-game stretch? So I actually looked into this, and another one of our posters broke the season down into like a four-tier schedule. So I've been really looking at it from that aspect. But if I'm looking at a three-game stretch, my favorite three-game stretch would probably be Missouri at home, at Arkansas, and Kentucky. And I think those are all in October. To me, those are three very winnable games. You get two of them at home this year versus two of them on the road. So if you need any type of bounce back, or if you need any type of get right type games where you can sort of get your feet under you and make a little bit of a run, knock out some SEC wins, I really like this little stretch right here. I think Missouri's going to be gettable. Kentucky's obviously gettable at home. You go to Arkansas. Arkansas lost a good bit to graduation and then to the portal. So they do bring back their quarterback. So what does that look like? But again, you should have been able to have a game plan to be able to handle Arkansas last year. But you know, you had five turnovers in the first half, four turnovers in the first half. Yeah, four turnovers in the first half. You had a fumble at the goal line. You got to redeem yourself there. So that's my favorite three-game stretch. My least favorite is pretty early in the season. Even though you get a bye week, this is kind of brutal. You go at Oklahoma, which to me should be a winnable game because they were absolutely decimated in the portal. Now, they did bring in John Mateer. They did bring in his offensive coordinator. The kid's good. The kid's really, really good. You have to go to Norman. It's going to be a great environment. It's going to be a big road test no matter what. It's hard to go win on the road no matter what, you know, what the circumstances are. So I think that would be a tough game. And then, so think about this in a two-week span. You're traveling out to Oklahoma. Then you got to turn around and travel out to College Station. It's a lot of traveling in a short period of time, and A&M is going to be really good. So you just beat them at home, I'm sure. In four overtimes, I'm sure they're going to want to be, you know, get some revenge. So that's going to be a tough back-to-back game. You do get a bye after that, so that's big. You get a chance to rest, but then you turn around, you have Georgia. So you go at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M, and then home to Georgia. That's a tough stretch. That is a tough, tough stretch, even with the bye. So if the bye wasn't there, that'd be dang near impossible. That stretch would be really, really, really tough. But the bye at least kind of gives you something to kind of work towards, and then you get a chance to take a rest and then get after Georgia. So that's my least favorite stretch, even though it'll probably be a really fun stretch. I like to go to one of those games, either Oklahoma or A&M. I've never been to either, so that'd be a lot of fun. Good question. Brian Beatty, you become the czar of college football. How do you make bowl games entertaining again? This to me is not that hard to figure out. And I'll tell you what I do. Now, I don't know exactly the how you make the money work, but basically what you do is you have a winner-take-all cash game. It becomes a winner-take-all cash payout to the players. Every single bowl game has money on the line. And I think that makes kids want to play harder. That would make kids want to, you know, maybe if it's worth it, not want to opt out of the game. You got cash money possibly on the line. It may make you want to stay with your team until it's done before you go into the portal. So like all these kids, all these teams aren't, all these teams aren't decimated by their kids leaving before they actually play their bowl game. You don't have a Marshall situation to where you say, well, we can't even play in a bowl game because every single one of our players went into the portal. Like this would give an incentive for them. Now the amounts and how many people you can take to the game to be able to do these payouts, that would be something you'd have to figure out. I don't know if you know how bowl games, conferences typically pool all the bowl payouts and then they distribute them amongst the teams. I think maybe you say, hey, if you don't make a bowl, you don't get a payout because we're going to pay the players. And then it becomes more of a winner take all, instead of the bowl paying out to the teams, maybe the bowls pay out into a pool and then you have sort of a winner take all scenario. Cash money makes everything more money on the line makes everything more interesting. So imagine if the team is playing for a couple million dollar prize pool. Imagine if those two teams are going head to head for $2 million. I think that'd be, I understand the college football purist that you may be like, man, this just doesn't feel right. But if you want interesting games, if they're playing for cash and there's cash being handed out, like there's money exchanging hands, whether it be from sponsors, the bowl committees, the schools, things like that, there's money out there going places. Figure out how to set aside a portion of that for that game to where the teams are playing for cash. I think that would be something that would make bowl games a lot more interesting. That to me is not that hard. I don't know the ins and outs of what the money that's moving and who it's going to and how it's purposed, but I know these kids get a crap load of gear. They get a crap load of accessories, you know, thousands of dollars worth of gear. Shoot, man, let's just say, hey, here's the deal. You come play in the bowl game, we're going to wine you and dine you. Then you're going to play for some cash at the end. I think that would be really motivate some folks and make some kids want to play in the game. So that's what I would do. What would you do? What would you do if you were czar of college football to make bowl games more interesting? Great question. Switching over to some basketball, Rhett Lashley Burner. Love that name. That's hilarious. With a potential new JUCO ruling, do you think Bruce and co regret not going harder after some high school elites? So I think where this question is going is Bruce has talked about how you have he's going to focus less on high school guys. Maybe you only take one or two a year and then you go to the portal to fill your needs. Well, now that you have this JUCO ruling where you get to keep your own players a little bit longer, could you have gone and getting a, do you regret not getting more high school guys because you don't have to spend as much money in the portal that you would have? So I think that's kind of the train of thought that this question is going on. And my answer to that is those guys coming back are essentially portal additions. So if Denver comes back, that's just like getting another guy out of the portal. If Chaney gets to come back, which he should, that's just like going to the portal and getting another guy. So that strategy really isn't changing. Now, there's two signing days for college basketball. We had the early one already. There's another one coming up in just a little while. If the strategy does need to shift, there's still players out there that could be added. There's still some big dogs out there that could be added if that's the direction you want to go. But the thing is, this ruling didn't gain you any extra money. This ruling didn't gain you any extra NIL to spend. So if NIL is the limiting factor where you have not, I say limiting factor. If NIL, you have to be very conscious on budget. This ruling didn't help that. It didn't like unlock a way for us to be able to spend more money. You're just adding, I mean, if Chaney comes back, if Miles Kelly comes back, if Denver comes back, if Chad Baker-Mazzara comes back, that's just like those guys were gone. So that you would have had to add four guys out of the portal right there. So this is just like adding four guys out of the portal. It's really no different. It's really no different than what the original strategy was. So I don't think it really changes anything. That's my answer. I don't think it really changes the strategy of what they were doing. War Eagle, Wyoming, start one, bench one, cut one. CBM, Miles Kelly, Chaney Johnson. This one's tough. If it's on the road, you got to start Miles Kelly because he's been just on true road games. He's been unreal. So, but just overall, you can't always have true road games. I think I'd start them in that order. I think I'd go in that order. I'd start Chad Baker-Mazzara. I just think from on the defensive side, on the offensive side, on the emotional side, on the leadership side, believe it or not, Chad has become like one of the leaders of the team. He has sacrificed points, sacrificed production to play, you know, scrappy defense and distribute the ball. And then he's even sacrificed minutes to let Ja'Kai Howard develop and other players get minutes. I think I go with CBM. I bench Miles Kelly and cut Chaney Johnson. Chaney could easily be number one, but he's got to stop fouling. Got to stop fouling. Learn how to defend better without fouling. So you can stay in the game. So you can stay in the game and play more minutes. So I think the one I'd go is in exactly that order. Start Chad Baker, bench Miles Kelly, cut Chaney Johnson. But I wouldn't cut Chaney Johnson. All right, two more. This is a really good question. This is kind of goes along the line of the discussion about retired jerseys. Reconciled, what are your thoughts about a potential Jani Broom statue? What would he need to accomplish this year for that to be considered? And then what about renaming the arena after Bruce? Okay, so let's start with the first one. What are Jani getting a statue? If you take the formula of what the statues that we have currently, you have the Heisman Trophy winners for football. So the equivalent, I guess, would be the Naismith Award. So if you win the Naismith Award, that's what we've done for football. If you've won the Heisman, you get a statue. I think that would be an auto qualifier. Okay, that would be an auto qualifier for him getting a statue right out of the gate. Like you really can't argue that he would deserve one. And then if he were to go to the NBA, you look at the other ones. Charles Barkley, he didn't win Player of the Year, but he's an NBA Hall of Famer. Frank Thomas didn't win like the baseball award for Player of the Year, I don't think, but he's a Hall of Famer. So I guess that would be the second qualifier. If you become a Hall of Famer in the NBA, that could be another qualifier for getting a statue. But I think I've been really thinking hard about this. Like, does Jani deserve his number retired? Does he deserve a statue? I really think he's one of the more influential dudes in Auburn basketball history. I mean, he's got better stats than Barkley did in his 3 years. They're both played 3 years, and he's going to end up with much better per game stats than Charles Barkley. He's going to have some SEC titles under his belt. And then this team, what could they do? If this team makes a deep run, Jani may deserve a statue regardless, even if he doesn't win the Naismith Award. But if he gets Player of the Year, he's a shoe-in for a statue. And I think that's a fair – to me, that's pretty rare. If you're the best player in that particular sport, in that particular season, you probably deserve to be remembered. I'd much rather have a statue than a jersey retired, because I just think you're missing an opportunity on a recruiting. I think you're missing a huge opportunity recruiting there when you retire jersey. So that's my answer for that. Player of the Year, build the statue, make a deep run in the national championship, and he continues to still perform the way he's done. I say build it. And then if none of that happens, but he has a really good NBA career, becomes a Hall of Famer, build a statue. I think there's a pretty good chance he probably gets a statue. If he keeps playing the way he's playing, I think he probably gets one, and he definitely deserves one. Last question, kind of off topic, but it's a good one. Daryl Dapprich Fan 05, the best name on the bunker. I mean, on the barn, sorry. That's old. Still got that old habit, man. What's your favorite band? What's my favorite band? So this may come as a surprise, but I just don't listen to a ton of music. I'm more of a podcast guy, talk radio, sports radio guy. As I've gotten older, I've sort of gotten out of the music deal, like where I just don't like music just doesn't do it for me. Like if I go on a road trip, I don't pop in, you know, a playlist or turn on Spotify and listen to music. I'm typically putting my headphones in and I'm listening to a podcast. So that's tough for me. But I guess I've always been in, this is so stereotypical, but I've always really loved AC/DC. If I want to get fired up, if I had to listen to like multiple songs from a band, the same band, for an extended period of time, I'd probably go with AC/DC or Led Zeppelin. Those are the two ones that I like a lot of their songs. I'll even listen to the ones that didn't really go mainstream. I kind of just dig those bands. So I don't like any of the new stuff. I've started listening to a little bit more Post Malone. But other than that, I don't really like a lot of the new stuff in any genre. I'm more of an 80s and 90s guy. So take that for whatever it's worth. But that's me. I'm not an interesting music guy, unfortunately. So, guys, I really appreciate it. A lot of great content. Got your quarterback situation figured out. Went through a lot of fun questions. If you want to jump in, subscribe to thebarnauburn.com. I drop the mailbag on Wednesdays, and then we pick out the best ones and have some fun on Thursdays. So if you want to jump in, it's easy. You get $25 off for 2025 for an annual membership. So you can save big and get in the mix, get in the conversation, and a lot of great information as well. Not only from me and the contributors, but a lot of the posters bring a lot of heat as well. So a lot of good stuff there. So guys, thanks for listening. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk again tomorrow. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.